The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Time is 7:44. Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Yes, I'm here. How are you guys doing?
Yes, very good. Thank you. So we announced last night here in South Africa that we are moving down to level one. So restrictions are easing. Cases have dropped dramatically. Of course, there's still social distancing rules. There's rules about sports events and religious services, but we are moving in the right direction. Israel, of course, is exactly the opposite. And from, is it this evening that Israel goes into a very hard lockdown?
Actually, it will be from tomorrow, Howard. The government has approved the lockdown, mm-hmm. and apparently it needs to go to the Knesset as well for approval. But effectively, we are going into a Rosh Hashanah, which will be a very, very tightly policed in terms of people gathering together, people moving around, and will last for 3 weeks. And so schools today are not operating and will not operate over the next few weeks. And of course, there will be a very, very tight security around gatherings against non-essential services being offered and against generally people being able to move around freely. So, it's going to be a very interesting Rosh Hashanah weekend and a general holiday time. What seems to have happened is that we've got people responding in different ways. A lot of people apparently are getting together with their families tonight before the lockdown starts in order to have a Rosh Hashanah dinner.
I get it. I fully understand it, but it's so counterproductive, isn't it? I mean, it's not.
It so goes against everything that is Rosh Hashanah and everything that is lockdown, because Rosh Hashanah, of course, is tomorrow. So it seems a little strange to celebrate it a day early. But people do want to get together. People want to have a holiday time with their family. So we certainly understand why they would want to do that. Some people are just leaving the country. There are flights that you can go to certain countries without having to go into quarantine when you arrive there. And apparently there are quite a few people who are just leaving on their way out before the lockdown. There are thousands of Hasidim on the border of Belarus and Ukraine who are not being allowed into Ukraine. Ukraine has closed its borders. These, of course, Breslev Hasidim who want to try to get to Uman for Rosh Hashanah. The border has been closed. They have been sleeping on that border with the Ukraine and Belarus already for a few days. The Red Cross is reported to be there helping them. They can return back to Belarus, to Minsk, and then back to Israel, because a lot of them originate from Israel. They can do that if they choose to. They're not prevented from moving around. They are being prevented from progressing into Ukraine and towards Uman. But most of them have chosen not to return back. They are there on the border. Apparently the Red Cross has set up tents for them because it's quite cold at night. Really, really strange situation, I have to tell you. I don't know that I would choose to spend Rosh Hashanah on the border between Ukraine and Belarus rather than coming back to Israel, coming back home. I'm not sure. So people are responding in different ways to the very, very strange situation. The traffic light system is working in Israel, whereby those towns and cities that are labeled as red have got more severe restrictions than those who, you know, where the infection rate is slightly lower. But overall, it's going to be a very, very different Rosh Hashanah for the people of Israel, and I'm guessing for Jews around the world in general.
It's very, very, very strange. And I guess it just is what it is. We just have to ride it and know that it is not forever and try and appreciate what we can do and not focus on what we can't do, because I don't think there's any other way. Our reality is just simply our reality, and we've got to find a way to deal with it in a way that, that is the most positive as possible.
Absolutely. I mean, we've just got to try and make the best of the situation that we have. And also bear in mind that this is really about protecting lives. This is not just trivial. This is not people trying to impose restrictions for the sake of it. This is really about protecting lives. And we've seen a massive jump just over the last few days In the number of people being infected in Israel, more than 5,000 now in one day. It's just a number that's inconceivable. So many more people seriously infected, people in hospital, people being intubated. The numbers have gone up quite dramatically. So we really need to do whatever we can to protect lives, to allow our hospitals and medical support staff to be able to cope with everything that they're having to deal with at the moment.
Tell us about President Rivlin. This was interesting.
So President Rivlin came on TV and actually his presentation that he did is available on YouTube as well. I've seen it there too. But he came on TV and he was highly apologetic. Apologies to the people of Israel for the way in which the government has behaved. Apologies to the people of Israel on a personal level, President Rivlin said, for transgressing the lockdown rules at Pesach, because of course he famously invited members of his family to come for the Seder night to the presidential residence when the rest of Israel had been given severe instructions not to get together with members of family for Seder night. So he apologized for that personal transgression, and then he appealed to people to cooperate. Please do carry out what the government are asking you to do. We know that the government has failed you. We know that you're feeling disappointed. This was really the tone of the presentation of the TV presentation that he made yesterday. I'm not sure whether it really is going to influence people to behave differently. I'm not sure. A lot of people are feeling very much disenfranchised. People are feeling frustrated. People are feeling that the way that they've been dealt with, the way that the pandemic has been dealt with, and the way that the man in the street have been instructed to do one thing, while the politicians feel that they're able to do something entirely different. This has just really frustrated a lot of people and made people decide that they're not going to cooperate. And there are quite a number of highly publicized cases of people who've decided, gone to the press and said, I will not be adhering to lockdown rules. There's one lady who runs a kindergarten who said, she will not close her kindergarten during the lockdown. She will, you know, adhere to all the relevant rules that are necessary to protect everybody involved, but she's not going into lockdown. There's another guy who runs a few entertainment establishments in Be'er Sheva. He runs a pub or two pubs, and he runs a restaurant, I think. And he has famously come to the press to say, very publicly come to the press to say, I am not going to shut my places down. Of course, he's inviting the police to come towards him, but he's simply saying that we can't afford economically to have to deal with this situation when it's been so poorly managed by the political echelon, that our politicians have really just dealt with this so poorly. And I think that this is President Rivlin coming out to say, guys, we're in a serious situation with so many people unwell, with so many new infections, and we need to do whatever we need to do, even if you feel that things haven't been handled well up until now, even if you think that some of the rules that have been imposed upon you are a little unfair or unjustified or unexplainable in many cases. There is little logic very frequently to the rules that are being imposed, and we know that a lot of damage has been done, but now has come the time that we really need to try to adhere to the rules. So that was the main message that he came out with, and I think his presentation is in Hebrew, and for people who can, I didn't see that it had any English subtitles, but it's certainly worth listening to what he has to say. An interesting appeal from the president, where he's not been very supportive of the government initiatives at all.
Yeah, it's really become a big thing, this, because there's such a level of dissatisfaction, and what I think he did was he just captured that. He just spoke for the people of the country.
I think he did, but the problem was that he didn't know really which side of the fence he personally falls, because he was one of those who at Pesach decided that what's good for those people is not good for me. And so people felt at that moment that he separated himself out, that he kind of falls more on the political spectrum side of the fence than on the side of the man in the street. I think he did himself damage by that action. And even though he has previously apologized and apologized again, but people still wonder whether he does feel the same loneliness, whether he does feel the same things, suffer the same consequences as everybody else as a result of this lockdown.
And just talking for a moment about the Israel-UAE deal, certainly I got myself into a lot of very interesting discussions yesterday around this because I tweeted out that I was shocked that the South African media, and at the time of tweeting, had not yet reported on this. And the reaction to my tweet was astounding. I have never had a reaction like this. More than 500 people liking it, retweeted more, a couple of hundred times, but what I found fascinating was the level of animosity from the South African so-called intellectual elite, Professor Jonathan Janssen, Richard Poplack, Tom Eaton. These are people that I really absolutely respect intellectually, follow their stuff, read their writing, but I was attacked by all of them for daring to support this notion. And in fact, my tweet wasn't even about supporting it, just saying that I was shocked that it wasn't reported. So the reaction has just been really, really astounding here in South Africa. But of course, further afield in the Middle East, that it's not just an intellectual or emotional discussion, it's very real. Iran weighing in on it finally. What are they saying?
Well, they are very, very critical of the so-called Abraham Accords. I like this term, the Abraham Accords. Prime Minister Netanyahu used the term in his speech at the White House the day before yesterday when he spoke about this, the children of Abraham coming together. And so this has now been dubbed, these two agreements that were signed have now been dubbed the Abraham Accords, of course, bringing all of the children of Abraham together in a peace agreement. President Rouhani came out saying that Israel was committing more crimes in Palestine every day, but that the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain will be responsible for any consequences which result from the normalization of relations with Israel. And so we're seeing, you know, the Middle East splitting down these political lines again. There is a little bit of confusion about Iran's position in the Middle East. Iran, of course, while being a Muslim country, is not an Arab country. And so when we talk about the Arab-Israel conflict, a lot of people want to throw Iran into that bucket. And I think it wouldn't be accurate to include Iran with the Arab other Arab countries, even though clearly it is Muslim. Having said that, it, of course, is not the same brand of Muslim as the rest of the Middle East, or at least Saudi Arabia, because, of course, we've got the split down the Sunni Shia line as well. And so we find that while Iran is a Muslim country, it is not the same brand of Muslim as is the case in, for example, Saudi Arabia. You know, most of the Muslims do identify either with Shia or with Sunni Muslim, and so within the Iranian area, at least, they are mostly Shia Muslim, and of course in Saudi, not so much. They are of the Sunni Muslim sects, and so they don't really see eye to eye. And as a result of what we're finding here, the Iranians are coming out now saying effectively a friend of my enemy becomes an enemy. That's what they're really saying. And whereas once before there was some level of cooperation that did go on, despite the divisions that clearly exist there, now because of the relations with Israel, they're kind of distancing themselves. And I think that Iran is becoming more and more of a threat within the Middle East, separating itself out from the Arab countries now, and from the Sunni countries, the Sunni Muslim countries, and really threatening the rest of the countries in the Middle East.
Although that said, Anthony, to be fair, part of, I believe, the motivation for this deal is that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. In other words, just because there has been some skepticism and shifts away from Iran, that allowed Israel to become closer and to become friends with these countries as well. So that this whole notion has definitely played very heavily on how this was constructed, I think.
There is no doubt in my mind that Iran's position within the Middle East has been very influential in convincing currently Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates, but also ultimately, I believe, Saudi Arabia, for the same reason, will also come towards Israel because of the threat that Iran does definitely present to them. I think you're right, absolutely. And whereas before we found that Sunni and Shia Muslims united against Israel because of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the one uniting feature amongst all Muslims. When you talk about Jerusalem, when you talk about like Al-Aqsa, that one notion seems to unite all Muslims together. And then from there on, it becomes divisions all the way down. And so while they were united on this whole concept of Jerusalem, it was all working pretty well. But now that's all split out. And I think you're absolutely right. Iran is definitely forcing many of the Arab countries to come towards Israel because of the threat that it presents. Mm.
Anthony Reich, that is where we leave it. And this is where we end our reporting with you for this year. We'll be back, of course, on Monday, but we won't be chatting to you tomorrow. So I just would love to take the opportunity to thank you for everything, for all your unbelievable reporting over the year. I know that it is a highlight for certainly for me and for many of our listeners. And it is absolutely invaluable. So wishing you and your family a Shana Tova, a happy, healthy, and peaceful new year.
Thank you, and the same to you, Howard. It's been wonderful to talk to you guys. I wish you all a Chag Sameach, a Shana Tova, Shabbat Shalom, of course. And I look forward to continuing next week as usual.
Absolutely right. It is 8:01.